Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante with the prodigal son who has returned, Steve Pavlik. How you doing, Steve?
Pretty good, Jim. I appreciate that introduction.
You like the prodigal son has returned. It's been too long. First of all, Steve, how's the summer going? I know you got the two little guys. Are they having a good summer? That's the important question.
They're having a great summer. The oldest is in camp. He'll be four in a few days, and the youngest just turned two. A lot of time at the pool to try to tire him out, but no complaints.
You say try to tire them out. That does it work most of the time?
Most of the time, but like anything else in life, you know, things don't always go according to plan.
Well, I'm glad they're enjoying themselves. There's nothing like being a four-year-old in the summer playing at the pool. Let's get started with our show. This is kind of a follow-up, Steve, to conversations you and I have had just, you know, ongoing as we chat on occasion. And I think that it's probably best to put it in your words, where sometimes we have to talk about, you know, the consensus view based on assumptions, things that it seems, well, I'll put it this way. I think oftentimes the media is just an echo chamber. Someone says it, especially if it's someone with some gravitas, a national guy, everybody picks it up, and all of a sudden it goes from one person's opinion to just an accepted theory.
Well, you'll never find me say anything nice about the media, so I'm not going to take issue with what you said there. I guess I just sort of look at it too, you know, from my day job, you know, a lot of times, you know, your role as an analyst is sort of to assess, as you said, you know, what is the consensus view and the assumptions that go into that. And then you sort of try to look at those assumptions and sort of analyze them and figure out where do you maybe have a different view than others. You know, you can apply that to a stock, a political event, whatever. That's sort of, you know, my lane. And I'll just point out with the usual disclosure for anybody who works in the financial services space, you know, past performance isn't a guarantee of future returns. And so I think to your point about, you know, a lot of times people just sort of apply, well, this happened last season, therefore, you know, something similar is going to apply this upcoming season. I don't know that it's always the case.
Well, I think the most obvious part of that theory is the last couple of years, the national champions have been Michigan and Ohio State. And the two things that are in common is how well both those teams did in retaining their talent. Michigan, a couple years ago, they did that national championship. They had made the playoffs the prior year, and it seemed like a lot of their veteran players who had maybe the opportunity to go declare for the NFL draft said, no, we want to run it back. We have more to prove, more to do. A year ago, Ohio State, a little bit different than Michigan in that they brought in a lot of real high-end talent in important positions at quarterback, at running back from the transfer portal. But what they also did was they retained a lot of their ongoing current talent. They came back, they ran it back, national championship. Now, if you're creating that kind of narrative, Penn State this season fits the bill probably better than anybody in the country, right?
Yeah, no, based on that, I mean, you know, the program, and I use that, you know, broader now than just the coaching, you get the NIL aspect, you know, doing a lot to retain the talent and bring them back and, you know, really try to go that next step after a pretty successful season last season. I guess where talk about challenging the consensus here is, you know, I think maybe the consensus is putting, you know, think about 100% percentage odds, you know, maybe they're putting 80% in terms of the players and maybe only 20% on the coaching ability in terms of, you know, here's what we're going to value more of the players coming back than the coaching. And I guess I'm probably closer to 60-40. I think the caliber of players is very important. That said, I think, you know, the coaching ability and performance, you know, I probably put a little heavier weight on that than maybe this consensus. And look, I'll be honest, that's where I guess I'm skeptical with Coach Franklin. I know I'm always sort of, you know, branded as a person that's down on Franklin. Let me just put the caveat. I don't know James Franklin. I've never met him. I don't have anything against him personally. What I use is a very simple metric in terms of how I quantify what I would consider a successful coach, and that is games against teams of comparable talent. An average coach should win about the same number of games as he loses against teams of comparable talent. A good coach is going to win more games than he loses against teams of comparable talent, and a bad coach is going to lose more games than he wins against teams of comparable talent. The issue with comparable talent is the fact that you basically negated the advantage on either side from a on-field perspective in terms of the performance there with the players. So it's going to come down greater emphasis on the coaching ability. Look, Franklin's record is what it is there. I think it's pretty clear which category he falls into based on my metric. And I bring this up is because we start thinking about the playoff run. Okay, when you get to the playoffs, that's when you're going to face a lot of teams of comparable talent. And you don't have to look any further than last season. When Penn State went to the playoffs, they had the talent advantage against SMU, Boise State. They were able to put them away pretty easily. And then they ran up against Notre Dame, a team where there was comparable talent, and they lost. And so I guess that's sort of where I'm just skeptical in terms of looking at Penn State versus Ohio State and Michigan prior to that.
You know, there was no doubt we were going to end up here with a James Franklin discussion. And so... Where you have the perhaps glass half empty perspective, I probably err on the side of glass half full. But with that said, I'll give you my rationale with this. And I think what's important to realize is this is not me disagreeing with you. It's kind of me looking at things from a little different perspective, the other side of the same coin, if you will. I think the perspective of Penn State returning so much talent, first of all, just independently on its own, it's a big deal, okay? And I believe you and I have talked about this before. With our projections for the 26 season, the 25 season was always that Drew Aller would not be back. Nick Singleton and or Catron Allen would not be back. Deny Dennis Sutton would not be back. Drew Shelton would not be back. In fact, most seasons, more players leave and declare for the draft traditionally than what I expect. And I expected a lot more guys to go. So even forgetting what happened a year ago or 2 years ago, I think this 25 team is going to be much more talented than either you or I expected, say, a year ago.
I agree completely.
And I think with that said, I think it puts them in as good a position as anyone in the country to win a national championship. Now, I feel like I always got to qualify that with, gee, Jim, are you saying Penn State's going to win the national championship? No, I am not. If I had a choice between Penn State or the field, I would definitely take the field, okay? I think there's enough parity, and I want to get your take on this, and perhaps we've talked about this before. I think there's at least, say, 8 teams in the country that I could name that have a shot at a national championship this year. So if they all had an equal opportunity, that would put this percentages at 12.5% for each of those 8 teams. Well, I think Penn State has a good or better chance than any of them. I think that gives them now a 15% or 16% chance to win the national championship, which is still better than any other individual team, the way I look at it. Your take on that?
Well, I was just looking at some of the sports books, and it looks like Ohio State and Texas, some have Ohio State slightly ahead, some have Texas slightly ahead, some have Penn State in 3, some of them 4, sort of behind Georgia and Clemson, I guess, in a few, sometimes ahead of Penn State, but right around there. So I don't know if I would go as far as saying Penn State has the clearest advantage, sort of in that grouping of 12, but they're definitely up towards that top echelon. Again, the usual caveat being, you know, health, barring major injuries for the seasons. But, you know, I guess, you know, I'm more of a, being in Washington, D.C., follow the money, has a long, rich history here. So I guess I'll sort of follow that where, you know, right now, at least the money is on Texas and Ohio State a little bit more than Penn State.
Well, then, and I think that's a fair assessment. If, you know, I say Penn State has as good, perhaps a better way to phrase it is maybe not a better chance, but let's say the teams that you met, Texas, Ohio State, no doubt very talented. Clemson has a lot going for them. Georgia, some folks might throw Alabama in there. But Penn State is among that group. So my question then is, you know, going forward is, what do they have to do to make this a successful season? So if one of those other four or five teams that we mentioned wins the national championship, does that automatically mean Penn State had a bad year? And the same question could be made. If I think as many or more people are putting their money on Texas as a favorite. If Texas doesn't win the national championship, is it a failing season for them, Steve?
For Texas, it may be different than Penn State. I guess with Penn State, I have a slightly lower bar of success here as opposed to national championship or bust. I would go back to where we sort of began the conversation with Franklin. Win some games against teams of comparable talent. If you were to go ahead and, let's say, beat Oregon and maybe win a couple of playoff games here against teams of comparable talent, not the mismatches we saw last year against SMU and Boise State. I don't really give them any credit for that. That's what I want to see. And I think, you know, if we saw some of that this year, you know, I think that would sort of be viewed as a successful season. You may get potentially three cracks at Ohio State. You know, I would like to see you beat them, if that's the case, at least one of those three times.
You know, that's a very good point. And I always respect that argument from you about winning where there's a comparable talent, a balance. And I'm going to address that more in another segment. But where I do want to attack next is this thought of the pressure and the importance of the couple big games. In the regular season, it's Oregon and Ohio State. And I suspect you'll agree with me. They've got to win at least one of those. They've got to, Steve. Got to. It's really important on a lot of levels. We'll talk about that when we get back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Steve Pavlik. It's quarter number two of our show. We're talking about Penn State's upcoming season, and there's some assumptions being made. There's a narrative, I'll call it, from the national media, and I want to attack some of that. And, Steve, we kind of started with Penn State is being looked at partially as one of the favorites in the country to win a national championship, because they're kind of following the story of Michigan and Ohio State the last 2 years, returning so much talent. I do want to point out, though, that Ohio State of a year ago, I think they were definitely the best team in the country. I think they proved that without a doubt through the playoffs. But remember, if we still had that 14 playoff, they would not have even made the playoffs last year, and perhaps Ryan Day would be looking for a job. And I bring that up, Steve, because I think there's a situation where you're definitely the best team in the country who, by a year ago's rules, would not have even made the playoffs. So I think there's a certain amount of luck to it. You know, do things kind of go your way? And for Ryan Day, the expanded playoffs perhaps even saved his job. So, you know, that's another way you have to look at that. And I bring that up because my thought is, okay, Penn State may be in a good position, but that doesn't guarantee anything. Fans in Texas, for Ohio State, for Georgia, for Clemson, they're all looking at their teams the same way. And guess what? Only one of them gets to win a national championship. But let's go back to your commentary on Penn State not being successful in winning against comparable talent. And going into this season, how many games are they going to go up against comparable talent, Steve?
I mean, right now in the regular season, I think it's Oregon and Ohio State.
I do, too. Is there more pressure on any team to win one of those games? And let me just throw in this, which I've talked about before. A year ago, Oregon, undefeated through the regular season, wins the conference championship. Ohio State lost two games in the regular season. And you know what? I'll say, so what? It didn't matter because Oregon got blasted in their first playoff game. Ohio State losing two games doesn't matter because they won a national championship. So for those two teams, I don't think getting one loss or even two during the regular season will matter much to either fan base as long as we get into the playoffs. Ohio State fans will say, hey, we won it all with two losses last year. Why not again? Oregon fans say, I don't care if we're undefeated or lose a game. We got to do better in the playoffs. But Penn State is different, isn't it?
It is, and it goes back to the decade of Franklin and this theme of teams against comparable talent. It's just going to create more pressure on, particularly if they lose that Oregon game, just that the margin for error. And just the expectations going into this season versus other seasons. I mean, this is something that, you know, Penn State really hasn't had to deal with as much. And, you know, we hear the big game James narrative. Unfortunately, I think Aller is sort of falling into that category as well, seeing how he's performed in some of these big games. And I just worry, you know, particularly if they lose that game against Oregon, is there a crisis of confidence? Do they just sort of, you know, start to spiral in the wake of these expectations? I hope that's not the case. And I think, you know, given back to the 10 years of fan frustration here, it's just different expectations compared to Oregon and Ohio State and some other programs, I think.
And this is where we 100% agree. I think there is so much on that Oregon game. Going to Columbus to win, and by the way, Penn State, although coming up short, has sometimes played pretty well in Columbus against Ohio State. But I think Ohio State is favored in that game for a reason. I also think Penn State is favored against Oregon for a reason. And the importance of that game is if you could be a named team, does that qualify then as winning a big game for James Franklin?
I think if Franklin wins one of those two games, you know, that would go a long way, just given his abysmal record against teams, again, comparable talent. At least you have something there in the win column. I just wonder, too, you know, just going through his long season, you know, somebody who used to play, you know, the letdown game after. Does after Oregon, you know, at home, do they go out to UCLA? I think they have the body clock there. And then after they play Ohio State, you're going to have Indiana. You know, win or lose, there's always going to be some sort of letdown there. And you know, I think that's one area where Franklin's, you know, maybe improved a little bit since his tenure began at Penn State. You know, oftentimes, you know, he let Ohio State beat him twice. You know, remember particularly a couple games against Michigan State that Penn State shouldn't have lost. He seemed to have gotten better about that. But again, he hasn't really dealt with these type of expectations, you know, in recent years. So I think that's going to be really important not to just watch those games with respect to Oregon and Ohio State, but those games immediately following. How does the team, you know, respond and how well prepared are they for that?
And I agree with that assessment. And I do believe he has gotten better at that. He doesn't let Ohio State beat him twice, you know, that week and then the following week. I do also think over the last couple of years, that skill set of making sure you win all the games you're supposed to, I think that has become important. We've seen teams, you know, that Notre Dame team a year ago lost to Northern Illinois. I mean, come on, that's not supposed to happen. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, now with the expanded playoff, you know, your season's not over if you just lost, you know, one or two games. And maybe that's, you know, we're seeing more motivation for these teams just to say, look, you know, our season, we can still have a successful postseason here with the playoffs. It's not limited to four teams. There's still a lot to play for. Keep your, you know, postseason hopes alive now. And maybe that, you know, is having some impact there with the sports psychology on the players.
I agree. You have to look at things a little bit differently where, again, for Notre Dame, you know, that kind of bad loss, they may not have been able to recover in a four-team playoff. And Ohio State had that situation. They had their second loss, you know, against Michigan, and they still got into the playoffs. But now with getting back to Penn State with those two games and where I may look at it, oh, well, forget how I look at it. It just may be the factual that Penn State is better than Ohio State this year, okay? And I think that's an unusual thing. We talk about comparable talent. So, gee, comparable talent with Ohio State, but Penn State always loses. I phrase it that way because I'm going to tell you something more about it as we get going here a little bit later in the show. But Oregon, I believe, is the game where you have every advantage. You have it at the game at home. It's going to be the whiteout game, so there'll be the excitement. I also have been pointing out, Steve, I think the coaching staff, as much as I hate that out-of-conference schedule, which is awful, they play nobody. I would say, often use the expression glorified scrimmage. I'm not even going to call it that. There was more of a challenge in the blue-white game than there will be in those first three games. So my argument is right now that Penn State coaching staff is already preparing for Oregon. Okay. There's no way in the world they shouldn't be prepared for that game, Steve.
It shouldn't be, but you know, one of the concerns I have just by not playing really stellar competition, you know, you really see that dramatic step up to get into a team of comparable talent. Is that going to be too much of a shock for you? You know, I hope that's not the case. Shouldn't be. But, you know, that's, again, a concern that I have where, you know, you just sort of go through these cakewalk games, you know, the guys become complacent, are they not getting the reps, and now you're sort of in a dogfight, and, you know, you're going to be forced to find out real quick, you know, what kind of program and player you are.
I think the advantage this Penn State team, though, has, where I'm not as concerned about that as some other people are, and I've heard that theory from several people, is I think this is a veteran team, especially at quarterback. You've got a guy there who, you know, this is his third year starting, okay? You could critique Drew Aller and his flaws separately, but I think what you won't have is the, this is his first tough game. He's had tough games over the last couple of years. I don't think that will be an issue. And there's veteran players all over the place. It's a veteran offensive line, veteran running backs. You know, the things that you worry about, will he have enough time to throw the ball? So the offensive line, I think, will do a good job. You have running backs who are very good at blitz pickup. So some of those things are in place. It's a veteran defense. So I'm not as concerned about that as other people are. My concern, and I'll put it to you, is Drew Aller and James Franklin are tied at the hip on this ability to win a big game, Steve. So is that going to be the concern going into this game against Oregon? Because even if they lose that game, it doesn't matter what else they do leading up to Ohio State. The national narrative will still be the same. They can't win the big one.
Right. And I worry more about Aller in that case than I do Franklin, just because so much of the quarterback position is on your confidence and your mental ability. And, you know, maybe we can talk, I know we're getting probably short on time here, about, you know, the assumptions here with the passing game. But that's something where I may be a little out of consensus on with respect to Aller in this season.
Well, and we will hit, we don't have enough time to go to it in depth, but that if there's a flaw on this team, a year ago it was at the wide receiver position. I'm one of those who didn't want to put the full weight of it on the wide receivers. I think the quarterback is also part of that equation. Did he not trust those guys? Did he trust Tyler Warren too much, Steve?
Well, again, I think the consensus, as you sort of allude to, is probably like the passing game was 90-95% the fault of the receivers and just very little responsibility or fault on Aller. I guess I'm probably closer to maybe 60-65% on the receivers and probably assign a little more weight there to Aller than the consensus view. You know, I just have a tough time believing that they recruited all these guys. None of them panned out. And I guess I'm just sort of skeptical, you know, heading into the season, you know, this idea that it was just these receivers were the problem, that somehow these additions to the portal are going to be, you know, exponentially better than what we had there, even though Higgins is still the coach. And, you know, is that really going to unlock Aller in the passing game? I'm not so sure that's the case. I hope I'm wrong, but that's sort of where I'm at.
Okay, we're going to pick it up from there when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Steve, I'm Jim. It's quarter number three of our show. We're talking about this Penn State upcoming season, some of the expectations, some of the assumptions that are made about this team. And Steve, we'll get back to the coaching, but when we finished up quarter two, we were talking about the passing game and specifically the wide receivers. And you and I, we were talking just a little bit between segments. First of all, the rest, I think we both have confidence in this defense, and maybe we'll hit that a little bit later. But back on offense, Drew Aller, I have probably more confidence in him than a lot of other people do. But I think the advantage at quarterback that Penn State has is it's a returning starter. Not the case at Ohio State, at Oregon, at Alabama. There are very few teams that have the returning veteran quarterback. I think that's important. Running back, I don't even have to say anything about that. Penn State's in great shape. We're reaching a point where offensive line, I think this is probably as good as any offensive line in the country. Tight end, even though losing Tyler Warren, I've reached the point where somebody, you assume wide receivers are going to struggle. I assume tight ends are going to excel, okay? The one place is that wide receiver, and we were wrapping up quarter two with this, and I like the way you put this. You assess, for want of a better word, blame or responsibility. It's not 100% the wide receivers. It's a percentage of Drew Aller also, whether it's lack of confidence or unwillingness to throw into tight windows at wide receiver, or was it just Tyler Warren was a crutch, or very talented crutch, but a crutch nonetheless?
Well, I think that going back to like the expectations for the season, you know, I think that's sort of, if we don't realize these expectations, that might have been one area where perhaps the consensus was wrong. Just sort of assuming that all the blame was on the receivers, and maybe not enough blame distributed, you know, there to Aller. You know, I share your optimism about, you know, the offense in particular. I think having the offensive line not only return, but, you know, that so many of them are there, that continuity, that's really important at that position. I think two running backs with the caliber of, you know, Allen and Singleton is great. I do have to point out, I think they would be you would unlock the running game more if you had a dual threat there at quarterback. I know we saw Prabula last year in some of those situations sometimes unleash that. I'm curious to see whether the team is going to put in a backup to Aller that's more of a dual threat option in some situational opportunities. Maybe some get some reps in those early games. Because if we have a situation like we had last year in Wisconsin, Prabula was called on to win that game, and he answered the call there. So I think that's really important. With Warren, he was a generational talent. I think you have a very talented room that can sort of do variations on what he did. I don't know if you have anybody, one person there on that roster that can replicate everything Warren did there. But again, the wide receiver room had some additions there through the portal. I just can't help but, you know, be a little skeptical that there's going to be this dramatic increase in production based on what we saw come in there. And just makes me wonder, you know, we've heard some of the time the criticism with Aller is, you know, does he have the confidence, you know, throwing to these guys? Now, you know, you could look on the film. A lot of times they would do this in the game, and you'd see that these guys weren't really open. That's where I sort of go back to maybe some of the criticism of Merritt Kotelnik. You know, we were sort of led to believe that, you know, he was going to be able to schematically, you know, get these wide receivers open and make it easy for Aller. I don't really recall that in the games against Notre Dame or Ohio State.
Well, and that's I don't want to make this a criticism of Kotelnik or even Drew Aller, in that if you're designing plays for Tyler Warren and if you have multiple options as a quarterback, I would trust Tyler Warren more than I would any of the other receivers. If, you know, if you put WR next to Tyler Warren's name instead of TE, you know, would the discussion be different? Okay. And I know they do different things at tight end and wide receiver, but they both have the responsibilities of getting open and catching the ball. And, you know, that's just was the best weapon. And in fact, there was a lot of times when Penn State would play multiple tight ends because those weapons were as good or better than the wide receiver weapons.
Well, and I personally, again, I'm biased because I did play tight end a long time ago, but I think tight end, the two tight end situation gives you an advantage in the sense that it keeps the defense honest. You can run out of that formation or you can throw out of that. We talked about the weapons there in the backfield there at the running back position. I think, you know, having that optionality, particularly when you have a seasoned quarterback like Aller, you know, sort of maybe make some of those reads there. If you don't have a surplus of talent at wide receiver, and I think there's reasons to be skeptical that we do, I like the two tight ends, but, you know, we'll see.
And I think, again, there are multiple tight ends that are talented. And I also think, you know, the fact that you have these two very talented wide receivers, you know what? Let's put them on the field at the same time, Steve, because they both could catch the ball out of the backfield also. And if you, my terminology is these guys, I look at them as weapons, okay? And whether it's a wide receiver, a tight end, or a running back, they're weapons. And where are your best weapons? And use those guys. I don't care if it's a wide receiver or tight end.
I agree. It's about deploying the talent that you have in the most effective manner. And look, sometimes, you know, depending on the matchups, you know, some games there will be more opportunities there for the running backs, and maybe other games more the tight ends, and other games the wide receivers. What you want as a coach is just to have, you know, those options where one thing's being taken away from you that can go somewhere else and be effective.
Let's spend a little bit of time on the other side of the ball with the defense. And this is the third defensive coordinator in 3 years or so. But have we reached the point where we just assume the defense is going to be good, Steve, no matter what? And the thought is with Jim Knowles, I was not a huge Tom Allen fan, so I do feel like this is an upgrade at coordinator. Do you have any concerns on that side of the ball?
Well, I agree with you that I think Knowles is going to be an upgrade. You know, one of the criticisms I had with Allen was just very slow to make in-game adjustments. I mean, how long did it take to figure out Bowling Green's passing attack? You know, you had that sort of third quarter there with Notre Dame. There was just no answer to what they were doing. Even Oregon, you know, the first half of that game. So I'm confident that Knowles will be better at making those in-game adjustments. I think Knowles will also improve the passing defense there, you know, with respect to the secondary. I think there's opportunities for improvement there, and I think Knowles will help deliver that. I guess the two areas of concern that I have, you know, you have the linebackers coming back. I worry about a matchup issue. They're sort of smaller. If you're going up against a team just going to run the ball at them, I think that could pose a challenge. I also worry about, you know, we talked about losing a generational talent, Warren, on the offense. You know, you lost a generational talent there with Abdul Carter. I was skeptical at the beginning of the season last year that Carter would make the adjustment as quickly and successfully as he did. He proved me wrong. And I just bring that up is because one of the reasons Deni Dennis Sutton was as effective as he was last year is because defenses were keying on stopping Carter. Now with Carter gone, they're going to be focusing on Deni Dennis Sutton. Will it be effective, as effective now with the double team? And also, what's the production going to be at that other end slot? Is that person going to be as effective as Deni Dennis Sutton was, you know, last year? And that's really important because the secondary looks a lot better when the quarterback doesn't have that much time to throw. So that's sort of how it all comes together. But to your point, I think the defense will be as good, if not better, than last season just from the addition of Knowles.
Now, I put a lot of pressure on the team for that in that Oregon game. And they've got the three out-of-conference games and a bye, too, right, before they play Oregon. So there's a lot of that time for the defense to figure things out, you know, for Jim Knowles to understand who his players are come game time. There's still the argument that you made earlier, because these are essentially scrimmages the first three times, they won't be tested at all. Are you at all concerned that defensively, because of a new coordinator coming in, that Oregon game coming as early as it is, it's the first conference game, do you have any concerns that the defense may not be where it'll get to by the end of the season?
I don't think they'll be as challenged. And, you know, because they're not really challenged in his first few games, you worry about the potential for miscommunication where you give up a long touchdown or two against Oregon, and you sort of fall behind, and now you have to rely more on Aller in the passing game than you otherwise would have liked. I mean, that's always a concern. But, you know, Knowles has been around a long time. As you mentioned, applying to the offense, I think the same thing applies for defense. A lot of these guys are veteran players. They've been in big games before. They've had to come back before. So I guess I'm optimistic there. One thing I'd like to see in terms of just self-scouting is, you know, Knowles was very effective against Kotelnicki last year. And can he sort of work with Kotelnicki, sort of, you know, the self-scouting to improve his offensive play calling? You know, that may be one of the advantages of bringing him in.
And I think that's a very good point, a valid point. And it's one of the things that they've talked about is that Kotelnicki and Knowles have been doing a lot of communicating with each other. So it's, you know, Knowles, the self-scouting, plus he's been very effective at stopping Penn State's offense, although with a very talented Ohio State team. But I think there's also, by being in this conference, Jim Knowles has coached against pretty much everybody that Penn State's going to play. So the league is not new to him. Plus, he's also, although, you know, as a defensive coordinator, he's looking at Penn State's offense. He has at least seen these players on Penn State's defenses before.
He has. And thinking ahead to this Oregon game, the last game Knowles coached against Oregon, he did a pretty good job. So, you know, one more reason for optimism, you know, that big game at the end of September.
Yeah, Oregon is not new to him. He has scouted them before. Apparently, he scouted them pretty effectively if you go by how that playoff game went. And I think that's going to be the case there. All right. As we're running out of time in this segment, I just want to get ourselves ready for next quarter because I want to go back to the coaching matchup. From the very start when we started this, Steve, you talked about, you know, some of the assumptions made based on the players on the field, but that doesn't account for, you know, the coaching staff. And if we look back, you know, we're trying to tie Penn State's team this year to what Ohio State did a year ago, to what Michigan did 2 years ago, and say, okay, this is the returning veteran talent, so that bodes well for Penn State. What you got to figure out is, all right, how about the coaching staff? We're going to hit that when we come back after this break.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Steve Pavlik. It's quarter number four of our show. Steve, we're talking about Penn State going into this season. Probably more enthusiasm going into this season than there ever has been in the Franklin era. The expectations are very high. And we started this show with, boy, a lot of talent coming back. This looks an awful lot like the last 2 years, Michigan and Ohio State. You pointed out, though, it's more than about the players. It's also the coaching staff. A couple things to point out. A couple years ago, Jim Harbaugh was the coach who was underperforming. And as I always put it, with a lot of these coaches, it's they don't do it until they do it. You know, Dabo Sweeney had that tag that he couldn't win big games at Clemson until he did. The one I like, because I lived in Philadelphia for a long time, college basketball, Jay Wright at Villanova. They wanted to get rid of this guy because he couldn't win in the tournament. That was the case until he did. So now we have the situation with James Franklin. And, you know, could that be the case? Now, I'll ask the question first in this way. What is it going to take for you to say this was a successful season and James Franklin was successful with this team? Obviously, a national championship will do that. But is there anything short of a national championship that will make you say, you know what, he did his job this year, the team was successful?
I think it'd be three wins against teams of comparable talent. We talked about winning either Oregon or Ohio State. Hey, you could win both. That'd be great. If you may have an opportunity there in the Big Ten championship game, and then if you beat somebody in the playoffs at least once, if not twice, with comparable talent, falling short of a national title to me would scratch that itch that Franklin really hasn't been able to deliver on so far. I guess if I had to play devil's advocate with respect to Harbaugh and Sweeney, Harbaugh, in my opinion, while he was sort of struggling to get over the hump there at Michigan, I think he had a track record of success going back to Stanford with San Diego, and then obviously in the NFL in terms of being able to beat teams of comparable talent or even superior talent. So I guess that's one distinction I would make between him and Franklin. I also think Harbaugh deserves some credit in terms of just, you know, recruiting to a style. You know, everybody else was zigging, going to these sort of, you know, faster, speedier models, and he zagged and sort of went to the, let's just go back to where he was at Stanford, and I'm just going to build an identity here of, you know, tough, hard-nosed football, run the ball down your throat kind of thing. And I'll give him credit for, you know, betting on himself and the innovation there. I don't know that I would put Franklin in that same category. And with respect to Sweeney, I think he benefits from being in the ACC. I think that's going to be a benefit for Clemson this year in terms of you look at their playoff path. I do think he had two really good college quarterbacks, and they were dual threat quarterbacks. And I guess that's sort of one of the critiques I have with respect to Franklin. You know, you had two, you know, quarterbacks that, you know, objectively on paper looked like they had some pretty good physical skills. He made the decision to go with Clifford over Will Levis. I'm not sure NFL scouts would agree with that. There's still the question of, you know, sticking with McSorley over Tommy Stevens. So you talk about, you know, coaching decisions and direction of the program, that sort of, you know, goes beyond just in-game decisions. You know, it's sort of what were the decisions you made at the quarterback position. I mean, even with Allard, you know, the jury's out. I hope he has a successful season. That said, it's sort of interesting that Franklin would recruit somebody who's not a dual threat quarterback, given that sort of the direction of where college football's headed. And we've had a lot of teams with this success. And the fact that you had these two, you know, really good running backs there, you know, you really aren't able to unlock their potential when you don't have a credible dual threat back there. So, you know, I guess when I sort of assess Franklin's coaching, again, it's beyond just the in-game decisions.
Well, and I mentioned earlier I was going to talk coaching a bit and the assessment of Franklin. So I want to throw a couple things at you for that, because this is my personal opinion. The consensus, the national narrative, is James Franklin can't win a big game. I mean, just last week, Paul Feinbaum, you know, when he had a guest on his show who said they were predicting Penn State. Never happened. James Franklin can't win a national championship, you know. We've seen the evidence. I'm not sure where the evidence is that Steve Sarkisian can win a national championship. And again, until these guys do it, and there's only a handful of guys in college football who've won a national championship who were still out there, okay, because you've had, you know, Nick Saban in Alabama, Dabo Sweeney in Clemson, and, you know, now Kirby Smart in Georgia. Who else? Okay, Ryan Day, Ohio State. Those teams have something pretty unique about them, Steve, and that's the ability to recruit talent differently than everybody else in the country. You were talking about quarterbacks at Penn State. Until Drew Aller, James Franklin had never brought in a quarterback that was ranked higher than 200th, not 200th quarterback, but 200th best player in the country, okay? Sean Clifford was the highest ranked quarterback that he had brought in. Certainly a far cry from Trevor Lawrence or three guys that Ohio State brings in every single year. But here's another thing. Penn State, mostly in losing the big games, they lose to Ohio State. And we talk about comparable talent. Let's go back. I just went back 6 years, okay? I could have gone back 10 years and probably come up with the same results. Last 6 years, do you know how many top 10 recruiting classes Penn State has had?
I don't know.
One. And that was eighth. There are other rankings in the last 6 years. So this is relevant to this year's team. 19, 14, 15, 21, 15. Okay? Last 6 years, how many top 10 recruiting classes did Ohio State have?
At least eight.
I'm sorry?
At least eight.
Well, in 6 years?
I thought you said 10. Sorry. In 6 years, I'd say at least five.
Six.
There you go.
In those 6 years, do you know how many top five recruiting classes they had in those 6 years?
I don't know.
Six. Okay? 5-3-5-4-2-5. That's the recruiting classes for Ohio State it's not even close. So if you use recruiting, and Penn State isn't cherry-picking transfer portals. Well, I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. They are cherry-picking. They're getting a handful of guys from the portal. They're not doing a mass accumulation of talent through the portal. They're doing it through their recruiting. Now, in those 6 years, Penn State, you could say, well, Ohio State is Ohio State. But Penn State had one top 10 recruiting class in that time. A quick look showed me, do you know how many teams there were with multiple top 10 recruiting classes? Clemson, LSU, Texas A&M, Auburn, Texas, Oregon, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, Michigan, Miami. How many of those teams, and of course, Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama, they're the obvious ones. They're top 10 every single year. But I just named, what, about eight more schools. Of those eight more schools, how many of them are in a position right now with their program as good as where Penn State is? And I'm using this kind of as an argument where I think James Franklin gets labeled with this, doesn't do as much with his talent. I'm saying he doesn't have the talent that other teams. Would you rather be where Texas A&M is right now? Would you rather be where Oklahoma has had four top 10 recruiting classes in the last 6 years? Would you rather have the Oklahoma program? It's easy to look at this and say, hey, they're not Ohio State, but boy, they're better than a lot of other programs that have out-recruited them.
I mean, I just go back to, like, make a good point about the disparity between Ohio State and Penn State. Ohio State definitely recruiting at a higher level and therefore wouldn't be a comparable team. I guess I would go back to Notre Dame game last year. I look at the record that Franklin has against Michigan. I think those were more teams of comparable talent where I would have expected better results.
Well, I think until the last couple of years where Michigan had those playoff and national champion teams, you know, Penn State had done fairly well against Michigan. But I think it's just a little too easy. We talked early on about the assumptions that turn into the consensus, that turn into the narrative. And I'm not sure those narratives are true. Now, and I know I've mentioned this to you before, if I would have a criticism with James Franklin, it's not that he's lost to Ohio State so many times in a row. Most every team loses to Ohio State. Most every team lost to Alabama. Most every team loses to Georgia. That's the way it works with those really, really good teams because they win all of their games. What I question, though, is James Franklin has had leads, double-digit leads, in the fourth quarter against Ohio State. In other words, he's come out with his much less talented team and outplayed Ohio State for three quarters and then found a way to lose. That's my criticism.
I share your criticism.
You know, some may say that's a distinction without a difference, but I think that there is a difference. And, you know, we only have a minute and a half left. Why does that happen, though, with James Franklin? What is the flaw?
I don't know in these close games, particularly with Ohio State, if he just, you know, it's like you've played loose and you've gotten to a point where, you know, you're ahead, favorite to win. He just gets too conservative and lets it slip away from him. But he's done it different ways over different years. You know, some years they put up a lot of points. Going back to that game they blew Ohio State in 17, you know, other years it's sort of been, you know, closer battles and maybe a little too conservative there in the end. I'm not sure.
And I do think that that is sometimes the case. And, you know, the example I'll give is last year against Ohio State, they got conservative when they were inside the 10. And if you remember prior to halftime, they got conservative in their play calling. He even let the clock run because he didn't want to give the ball back to Ohio State. And that's not James Franklin's nature in the other games. His nature is to attack.
Yeah, there's a difference between playing to win and playing not to lose. And I think in these games against Ohio State, when he has a lead, he starts to do the latter, play not to lose. It's like the old prevent defense. It prevents you from winning.
I agree with that. I hope they play fast and loose in these games this season. And I still go back to, I think that Oregon game is so critical. Steve, thank you so much for coming back. The prodigal son, Steve Pavlik, was back, and we enjoyed it. Always fun talking to you, Steve. We'll have to do it again real soon. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.